The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly, incorporating Champions League draw special on the way. Rodgers Liverpool, Rodgers Spurs. Suarez and co. run riot at the lane, and after Michael Dawson's back four disaster, it's there's the Dawson for his manager. Meantime, Man City Arsenal, after too few goals on Wednesday, they get way more than they needed. In this one, Pellegrini gets it wrong again. What does it mean for Arsenal's title challenge, and how will Barcelona feel about drawing City? Yes, in the last 16 of the Champions League. Elsewhere, there's all the reaction to the big draw in Neon. Arsenal buy on, etc. More on the weekend, the sack and the baggies, posts, tweets, and more in this Football Weekly. Welcome to Football Weekly, where the cat's just been introduced to the pigeons in a very real sense by the events on this Monday morning. In the pod today, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
With an extra big notebook o' notes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Paul McInnes is winging it.
I got a sheet and a half.
All right, sheet and a half. Hey, Simon Burton.
I've got a single sheet, just names.
Right.
I've been doing actual work this morning.
What kind of names have you got on there then?
You know, I've got things like Milan versus Atletico Madrid. We'll come on to that kind of stuff later.
Okay, cool. Have you got the name of the next Spurs manager now that they've binned off poor old AVB?
I don't have that name. No Martin Jones available.
That's certainly true.
There is a good piece of gossip going around the sport, the office today, from Larry Elliott, so renowned economics writer of The Guardian and also big Spurs fan, who insists that the word on his street is that it's going to be hodling with Chris Hughton and Clive Allen to back him up.
Dream team.
Yeah. All that, basically just get Garth Crooks in there, get any Gary Mabbott. Anybody else from the 80s, you can just remember, just stick them all there. Have an 11-man management team.
I saw Clive Allen last week at BT Towers. He was running to catch a train.
All right.
He didn't
now
say
we know
anything
why.
About where it was going.
Right. Well, this all follows the extraordinary performance at White Hart Lane of Liverpool, who arrived without Steven Gerrard and yet still managed to play really, really well. Suarez in particular earning the plaudits. Barry, have you got any words or stats for the Uruguayan's incredible performance?
I can strafe you with my Suarez stat gun. He has two more goals in 11 Premier League games than Spurs have scored in 16.
All right, surely it's true to say it's not just Spurs, but two more goals in 11 Premier League games than half the Premier League have managed to score so far.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, Liverpool thoroughly dismantled an abject Spurs side. Despite missing Steven Gerrard and Daniel Sturridge, a lot of their young players stepped up. Jordan Henderson was a revelation, and he continues to show that, or to fulfil the potential that Liverpool paid 15 or more million pounds for.
Would it be, do you think, jumping the gun to say, oh, well, obviously their midfield plays that much better without Gerrard? Is this perhaps the way they should be going? Or was it just that Spurs were so badly set up for this match?
Well, they were. The way they set up for the match was probably the worst possible way that... Or they faced their worst possible opponents for setting up on that match, because Liverpool are so good in playing into that space behind the high back line. They, you know, they've got pace, they've got quick interchange, and they've got real delicate passing, which, you know, allows to play in that space and doesn't get into the area where Lloris can come out and sweep. But I think it's quite interesting, if you look at the side yesterday, which had Flanagan, Allen, Henderson, Sterling and Skirtle all starting. I think if you would have looked at that last season, you would have thought, that's a pretty shaky team. And actually they looked, all those players played very well. And you wonder actually if there's been a real development in this squad.
Barry, you were mentioning Kevin Nolan's ruthless plan every season to get himself off at Christmas. Do you want to know Andre Villas-Boas whether he had a particular desire for a little time off to do some shopping?
I was just thinking, someday he'll shuffle off this mortal coil and his epitaph will probably read, "Here lies Andre Villas-Boas, he played a high defensive line," because it's cost him three jobs now. It's cost him his last two jobs against...
You'll soon be right, I'm sure, Barry.
Yeah, well, indeed. But it did from a Chelsea, and you know, it did for him at Manchester City when they played them a few weeks ago. It was that result, the high defensive line that resulted in them getting thrashed, and they made it easy for Liverpool again yesterday. And you wonder why why the hell was he playing the same way when it worked so badly at City?
It did for them against West Ham at home as well, and they're going to be playing them this midweek. But I'm not sure with who in charge. This is in the Capital One Cup, the League Cup quarterfinals.
Yeah, and you know, they will be one game away from the semi, and they're doing all right in Europe, and he's got the highest win percentage of any Tottenham manager in the Premiership.
Wow.
Premiership era. So it does seem, I can understand to a certain extent why you would play a high line when you're playing at home and you're off the back of two straight wins. You know,
it speaks
of confidence.
But when you've got Vertonghen out and who else, like Kabul's out,
yeah,
and Dawson in.
Danny Rose is still out.
Danny Rose
Kyle
out.
Kyle Nocton had an absolute shocker. Like one of the worst performances I've ever seen. He got hooked at half time and he was probably delighted to be hooked because it was. Oh, he must have been mortified. Raheem Sterling just twisted his blood, and he was excellent as well.
How far can Liverpool go?
Well, they can stay in the top four, certainly. I think they were missing Gerrard yesterday. People were asking how they would do without him, but if you think of the first match they played without Suarez in his ban last season, they went to Newcastle and won 6. They started the season without Suarez, played excellently. Then they lost Sturridge. People wondered how they'd manage without him. You know, it's a test for a squad when you lose a key player, and Liverpool have a few of them, and they seem to be coping with that really well. And like just as at Newcastle, they were missing a key player yesterday, and they absolutely shone. So I think they're a good squad with lots of good ideas.
Interesting.
Without the distraction of Europe, you know, that's a huge thing in their favour, because it means Rodgers has more time to prepare tactics and whatnot, him and his staff. The players aren't as tired, and the players have more time to train. And I think that must be very useful for a young team that's being built.
Well, indeed. They're just 1 point now ahead of Man City, level with Chelsea, and both of those two teams with interesting opposition coming up in the Champions League. Paul?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see after Christmas, won't we? Because, you know, we've got that crunch period coming up. But I've just got this, just watching Suarez play at the minute, it is just an absolute thrill. And the guy is able to conjure something out of nothing to a greater capacity than any other player in the league. And you just get the feeling that because he's in a slightly smaller club, in the sense that they haven't won trophies for a while, he's thriving on that responsibility. And he's almost dragging them into title contention. And it's really, really great to watch.
He's on fire. He's not cup tied. Just going to be really interesting to see what happens when January does come round. Now,
what next for AVB, do you think? I mean, it was becoming increasingly difficult to defend him against naysayers, some of whom I think had it in for reasons that weren't entirely related to football. But they're looking vindicated now. And I just did a tot out of 6 years worth of contract with Chelsea and Spurs, he's been in employment for just over 2 years.
Wow.
So I don't like to see anyone lose their job, but it's difficult to feel sorry for someone when they're getting a big payout for doing nothing.
He's averaging less than a year per job. Statistically, he has one totally anomalous period as manager of Porto, a very strong team in a relatively weak league. And other than that, his stats are basically fairly consistent between Chelsea and Tottenham. They point to something, somebody who's not really quite good enough.
Right, you said anomalous, didn't you? No, yes. I thought you said anonymous, but anomalous.
Anomalous, not anomalous. Anomalous. No. At Porto, he played what? I've got it written down here in my single sheet of notes. He played 47 games. He managed Porto for 47 games and won 41. So obviously a ludicrously successful period that kind of set him up in management, but he has consistently failed to fulfil on that promise.
I think he has failed, and he's managed to get enemies in both clubs, and his personal relations have been a disaster, and I think that's a significant factor too. But at the same time, to go back to that other stat, he does have a great record compared to other Spurs managers. He has had to incorporate or had to adapt to the sale of his best player, and also 9 mega box signings, most of them whom can't speak the language, haven't played in the league before, and have been recruited by the sport sporting director.
They are still seventh, Tottenham, as well. It's not like they're having a total train wreck of a season. They've had a few train wrecks, like individual car crashes. Mm. But
been the odd shunt.
The occasional
but
shunt.
They haven't beaten anyone in the top 10 so far this season.
Or anyone higher than 10th.
Only taken 3 points, I think, from top 10 sides. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we must move on, as indeed Spurs have done, from AVB, because that wasn't the only big thing that happened this weekend, because also you had your Man City-Arsenal, which was billed as a big, big test for Arsenal, and boy, did they fail it.
Mm.
Mm. This was pretty comprehensive, as victories go. I know there were one or two qualifying things, if Ozil hadn't handed the ball to Fernandinho, and maybe if they hadn't hit the post, and if Giroud hadn't been tired, etc. But
there's no doubt in my mind that the better team won, but I'm not so sure it was a 6-3 shellacking.
Mm.
Arsenal were poor. It was a very poor performance with loads and loads of individual errors that got badly punished, and they could have lost by more. But some refereeing decisions or offside decisions went against them at crucial times. Two in the first half. The Bentner goal shouldn't have been disallowed. They could have had a penalty. Things like that.
Could have had more, though.
Yeah, I think so. I don't want to take away from Manchester City's performance because it was absolutely mesmeric. I did the minute-by-minute report in this match. And
so you weren't able to watch it, really?
No. It was the hardest one I've ever done.
Right.
It was just non-stop action from the kickoff to the final whistle.
Hull are the only team to play at the Etihad Stadium in the Premier League this season and concede fewer than 3 goals. Wow. It's remarkable, isn't it? That's that 3 at the back from Steve Bruce. Bingo.
Hull should have won that game, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
Oh.
It was just that physicality that City had, though, and not just in, you know, the Touré and Fernandinho, but Nasri as well, looking incredibly strong on the ball and off it too. And that's something, I think, a characteristic that's been there in a lot of the big games they've played this season. City, they've got a real physical presence.
Wow.
Zabaleta. Yeah.
So, with that defeat for Arsenal, is it now City and Chelsea for the title in a matter of time? Chelsea, of course, visiting the Emirates next weekend when Arsenal are going to be without Koscielny and presumably Jack Wilshere as well, after he did his best Stoke in the 70s impression and stuck his finger up.
Well, Manchester City's squad has always looked like the strongest in the league, and they're fulfilling that promise now, but both at home and away. So they've got to be favourites for the title. But Arsenal have looked strong. They were outclassed for certain periods on Saturday, but there was a period when I think the score was 3-1 and they created a succession of chances.
Mm.
And the game was kind of up for grabs, potentially, if things had gone their way a little bit.
So are you saying that if they play that way, and they do, and they play that way well, sometimes when it goes wrong, it can go wrong very, very badly, but it doesn't mean that there's necessarily a huge chasm between the two teams?
I don't think so. I would expect Manchester City to win the league this year. I did at the start and I continue to.
Wenger makes the point that he still has to host Chelsea, of course, this weekend, and Man City at home, and so they're very much...
Well, the next month is going to be really fascinating. There's a series of crucial matches between clubs with top 3-4 and title-winning ambitions. And I mean, in a way, it's inevitable that it's going to be discussed on podcasts like this, but it's a mug's game to be trying to make long-term predictions, and what we should be doing is just kind of enjoying the feasts of football that we continue to be served.
Well, it was an extraordinary feast, wasn't it?
It was. It was a proper slap-up dinner, wasn't it?
But what you're seeing here from Arsenal is some of the traditional failings. You know, the physical weakness. Wilshere just didn't look up to the task a lot of the time, and also sort of potential mental failings as well. Which, when you see the two, you know, the Germans round with each other, Wilshere giving the bird to the fans, that's the sort of stuff that has undone them in the past, and it's one of the first times we've seen that this season, or perhaps in this week we've seen it. So. Big question for them. Were you saying about Luis Suarez that they're not being cup tied? So do you think that Wenger will come back in and make a cheeky £75 million bid for him?
I don't know, but you wouldn't be surprised if come January the 1st somebody weighs in. Mm. Hey, Uncle Silvio, not cup tied. Mm. Anyway, let's move on then. The draw for Man City, they got big, big opponents. Leicester in the Capital One Cup coming up this midweek. Little joke there. Actually, of course, I'm not talking about that. Hey, Barcelona. Having pinched half of Barcelona's backroom staff, now they're going to take on the big dogs, the Catalans.
Yeah, El Mundo Deportivo's front page today was City No.
The one team
they didn't want. They didn't want Kun. They had a picture of Kun on the front.
Ah, boy, that's good knowledge. That's good knowledge.
He's going to be out for a while, actually, with a calf injury. I don't know how badly he'll be missed, but...
Who, Aguero?
Yes.
I'd suggest he'd be missed quite a bit, no?
Well, I mean, they've spent so much money and there's so much talent there to draw on that.
Isn't he their special player, though?
Well, he is special, but they have a lot of special players.
They do, I suppose. You know. He's got his own trademark goal. His goal was a trademark Aguero goal, wasn't it? Falling over. I'm going to fall over in order to give myself momentum for really lashing this one in.
It was an incredible goal. The technique and to be able to keep it down, the ball waist high and falling over and sort of behind him. I genuinely don't know how he did
it. I love the way as well, because you're a bit like a man running off a cliff in the cartoons who will continue for about 30 metres or so before eventually realising the effects of gravity. Koscielny was still clearing that ball even after it was in the net.
Yeah, Koscielny didn't have one of his better games, it must be said. And he's also injured. He's lacerated his knee. I don't know how bad it is. I thought, just looking, that it was his cruciate had gone, but apparently it's not that serious.
No, just lacerated knee. All right, then. Well, hey, how about that? Do you want to throw a prediction away, or do you want to live in the now, Simon Burnton?
From the Manchester City-Barcelona match?
Yes.
I predict a tasty couple of matches of football.
Good.
So, I think City can win it.
Bibs on all round there. What about Arsenal-Bayern?
Much more difficult.
Really?
Bayern against Manchester City was a really confusing match last week. The first 15, 20 minutes... Bayern looked incredibly composed and it looked like they were going to totally take Manchester City's reserves to the cleaners. But obviously there's some fallibility there.
Mm. Although
Arsenal won their last season, albeit having lost badly in the first leg.
All right, well, let's take a quick pause and then dial up Sid Lowe to find out what else they're saying in Spain about that draw for the last 16.
To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to The Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES, that's T-A-L-E-S. The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hey, nice to hear from you, Sid. Did you watch the draw?
I didn't actually, because I was writing about Atletico Madrid, but I was following it on Twitter. I was fairly confident that someone on Twitter would tell me what had happened.
Right, and they did, didn't they?
It's quite amusing following it on Twitter, because you get basically 25 tweets in a row all saying the same thing.
Yeah. Atletico Madrid, who was, as Jamie Redknapp was pointing out, was the team everybody wanted in that last 16 draw. And
the best thing about it, Jimbo, is it wasn't Jamie Redknapp who said that. Sally Montari said, "We want Atletico Madrid. They're the weakest team. Boom, have that. I tell you what, they're a lot less weak than you, sunshine."
Right. Yeah.
Although, of course, you know, having said that, big caveat time where they could well knock out Atletico Madrid because weird things happen, don't they?
Well, they do, don't they? Milan Atletico, as Paolo Condo points out, it's going to be the same duel from the Mexican Revolution with Zapata taking on Villa. That's fascinating, isn't it?
I love it. Which reminds me of probably my favourite ever Young One sketch we've seen in the world where.
Revolutionary biscuits of Italy.
From Italy, rise, I tell you, just brilliant. Yeah. Your Peak Freen, Trotsky assortment.
Indeed.
I'd love Peak Freen to bring out a box of Trotsky assortments just for a laugh.
Sid, it's not going to happen.
Why not?
Well, it's just not. Anyway, but Peak Freen's, you know the address, yeah? Okay.
What is the address?
It doesn't matter. Atletico Madrid, Sid. Let's talk about them for a second. Diego Costa with another brace. As they beat Valencia 3-0, and they're keeping pace with Barcelona at the top. A lot of people thought that they would be fading away a little bit by now, as maybe they had in previous years.
Well, as you said then, keeping them up pace with Barcelona at the top. Last night, they had 9 minutes to score a goal that would have taken them top. They couldn't get it in the end. When they scored the third, Diego Simeone started going crazy on the touchline, wagging the finger, saying, "One more, one more." You look up, 9 minutes to go, the fans start chanting, "We want a fourth, we want a fourth." Because if they'd got a fourth goal, they would have gone top this morning, and they would have denied Barcelona a record, a La Liga record of 54 consecutive weeks at the top of the table. They are level with Barcelona on 16 games, 14 wins, one draw, one defeat, a plus 34 goal difference. But whereas they've scored 43 and conceded 9, Barcelona have scored 44 and conceded 10. That's the only reason Atletico Madrid aren't top today.
Do you have a three-team title race, Sid?
I think we do. My doubt, I suppose, would be what happens to Atletico Madrid if Diego Costa was to get injured, because he's so set. Barcelona and Madrid are probably strong enough to beat everyone else without Messi and Ronaldo. Atletico Madrid, there's probably a little bit more of a doubt about that, but they're so well organised. I personally, I mentioned this to someone at Atletico last night, I think the best thing that can happen for them is to get knocked out of the Copa del Rey. And they get knocked out of the Copa del Rey, it basically clears up January for them. But when I mentioned this to someone at the club last night, they were like, well, yeah, what? Because Diego's going to let us do that. And that's the point. Because Simeone is absolutely relentless. And they're a really, really good team. They've conceded fewer goals and fewer shots than anyone in La Liga. They make more challenges than anyone else. They're very direct. They're very aggressive. But they're a talented team as well. And you know, in the Champions League group stage, they're one of only two teams to go unbeaten, 16 points.
Yeah, no wonder.
It was not a brilliant group, and they were a bit fortunate in the last of the games. But they're just a really, really good side now.
So you're saying they're not worried about meeting Milan?
Well, I don't know about... I wouldn't say they're not worried, because, of course, you know, they won the group, so they could have got easier teams than Milan, and they will look at it. And the thing about Milan is, in Spain at least anyway, just the name conjures up quite a lot of respect, and people do have a certain amount of concern over them. But I think Atletico Madrid would have looked at this and thought, so long as they didn't get Arsenal or Manchester City, they would have been reasonably happy. It's possible that Milan are about the second or third strongest side after those two, maybe even the strongest side after those two. So they're not entirely happy from that point of view, but I think they were relatively confident. And Gavi last night, the captain, said he wanted Milan. Mm. But of course, he said he wanted Milan with a cheeky grin, because he'd just been told about Solly Montari. And he said, they want us, I want them as well then. And by the way, who's Solly Montari?
Yeah, absolutely. I personally think Atletico Madrid will tear Milan to shreds. Let's talk about Barcelona's chances with Man City.
Well, it's very, very difficult to judge what kind of shape Barcelona will be in by the end of February, because by then Victor Valdes will be back, by then Leo Messi will be back, by then you never know what kind of physical condition the team will be in and whether they'll be in better shape. But there's no doubt that they didn't want Man City, no doubt at all. And it's a fascinating one for all sorts of reasons. Obviously, the move of Chiqui Beristain to Man City, the desire to create something similar to Barcelona in terms of approach. And Barcelona aren't happy. Zubizarreta, the sporting director, said, well, I imagine they wouldn't have wanted us either, which of course is true, but it doesn't disguise the fact that they look at this and they think they've got a really, really, really difficult draw. And of course, they glance across at what Real Madrid have got. And it feels even worse for them, I think.
Hmm. Real Madrid have got Schalke. Yeah, Paul McGinnis is pointing out that...
I must confess, I've not seen that much of Schalke, but what little I've seen, they don't seem to be particularly good to me.
It's quite probable they'll have a new manager by the time that game is played. That's how patchy their season has been so far. No, a mixed draw for the Spanish stroke Catalan clubs. Any other news we should know?
Any other news? I'm trying to think if there's any other news. I'm not sure there really is, Jim.
No? All right, then. Super. We'll catch up with you on Thursday.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Bingo. Well, yeah, there's just so much to talk about, including the Europa League draw, which we'll come on to a bit later on, because I haven't quite finished doing it there in Neon. The attractively coiffured Gianni Infantino there. Very much the master of ceremonies.
Attractively coiffured?
Well, you know what I mean.
He's bald.
Exactly. Fetching Gianni Infantino currently.
Do you reckon you could unscrew his head
and put mine
and no, there'd be like one of the balls he has for his drawers and pull out a piece of paper with.
You're baldest, Barry.
It's not.
Yeah, that's what you're doing.
The Guardian's TV picks of the day today. Did you spot those?
Nope.
The world's strongest man.
Really?
Featuring your good self.
Hey, there you go.
Is one of
that's
the
quite a
sections.
Draw. I don't know about now. Also in that Champions League draw, Man United got Olympiacos, which I suspect they'll probably be quite happy about. And I don't know if the Greeks will be that unhappy about it. What do you think, Barry?
Yeah, I don't... The current Manchester United side, I don't think Olympiacos will be a pushover. They've got this Kostas Mitroglou up front, who has scored 21 goals already this season, including four hat-tricks.
Saviola?
Yes, a Weiss. And I wasn't aware of this, actually, but Olympiacos are one of the, sort of, I think, in the top 10 most supported teams in world football.
How about that?
Despite having a stadium that only contains 34,000 people.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for them.
But, I think both teams, like you say, will be happy with that draw.
All right, OK. Man United got a big win away at Aston Villa, as per usual. Darren Fletcher... this was quite a surprise because they'd ushered him back quite quietly, hadn't they? It was a little bit under the radar. And it was in November 2011 that he last appeared and been battling a condition which I think a lot of people thought might effectively end his career. But did you see this game? How did he perform?
He did all right, actually. Didn't look like a player who'd been away for a long time, but then it was a nice, easy game for him to bed himself back in. And it was great to see him, because it's a very unpleasant illness he has.
Well, indeed. Could he be just the man that Man United were missing in their midfield?
Could be, but we don't know how long he'll be able to play for, or you know, I just don't know enough about his condition to be able to speculate as to whether it could strike again any time or if it's under control. I don't know.
It would be unfair to celebrate prematurely. Obviously, it's great that he's fought his way back into the first team squad, but the evidence of 20 minutes against an already beaten Aston Villa is, I mean, not really significant enough.
We'll see
how we go.
From the other end of the telescope, Villa were pretty bad yesterday, which I think shows that, and I think they're about 11th or maybe 10th, it shows that the bottom half of the table, that everybody's got the capacity to be pretty horrible on their day, I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. They are indeed 11th. Chelsea, who had an interesting game with Crystal Palace, have drawn... Yeah, it's kind of the sentimental choice here. Galatasaray, so you got Schneider from his Inter days, Mancini's Inter days, will be with them at Drogba, of course, as well, back at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I'm not sure if they'll bring their tractor with them.
I think that's a draw neither side will be particularly unhappy with. I fancy Chelsea to go through. I mean, Chelsea aren't playing well, particularly well at the moment. It could be argued quite emphatically that Palace should have beaten them on Saturday, but there's still a point ahead.
Palace should have beaten them, really?
I think so, yeah. I thought Palace had enough chances to beat them and couldn't put them away.
All right.
I mean, Chelsea's, you know, uncharacteristically for Mourinho's side, Chelsea's defence is really patchy.
Mm.
And that, you know, three strikers, five league goals between them, it's not great.
Mourinho asked after the game about their performance, the boos from some of the Chelsea fans who were frustrated by the final 10 minutes or so, and the comparison with Man City, who'd been absolutely spectacular earlier that day. Should they be more like Manchester City? And he replies, Manchester City is 1 point behind us, so they need to be more like us. And yeah, interesting.
That's true. I mean, and you know, just a reminder of the value of Mourinho as a coach. He gets those results again and again. But I think what Man City do is that Fernandinho and Negredo aside, really, the key, the spine of their team has been in position for a couple of seasons now.
Mm.
And their experience playing with each other, and they're, you know, they're, a lot of them are in the peak years of their... I think sometimes you look at those three forwards behind the one striker and you wonder about what sort of combinations, how they play together as a unit.
Right. Okay. Now, that didn't help Crystal Palace very much. They remain in the bottom three. They're now 1 point behind West Ham, whose draw with Sunderland gives them a little bit of breathing space there at the bottom. Great stat that was doing the rounds about the fact that that's now 5 0-0 draws for the Hammers this season, which is more than the entire Bundesliga put together.
Yes. So a draw is obviously, I mean, they got a point, but they also got pretty harshly criticised for their style of play.
Mm. Is Big Sam, I'm not sure what the bookies are saying now, because AVB's gone, Steve Clark's gone, which we'll talk about. Well, is he the next man?
I actually checked this morning, and this was before AVB got his cards.
Mm.
He was 4-1 on to be next manager to go, and Big Sam was next in the betting at around 10 or 12-1.
It's an exciting game,
so
this,
Big
isn't it?
Sam will be the favourite to be next manager to go now.
Here's a stat for you from Sporting Intelligence, which I've just updated with our latest information. Of the 92 English League clubs, 14 of them, which is more than 1 in 7, it's about 15.2%, Simon.
I believe so, from quick mental arithmetic.
So of those 92 English League clubs, 15.2% of them have made a managerial change, not this season, This month.
That is a good statistic.
How crazy is that?
It is really crazy. On the blog yesterday, underneath the Steve Clark discussion, people were there was more and more people posting saying, "Well, actually, changing managers is a good thing."
Mm.
You know, look at Chelsea. Look at Chelsea. They keep changing the manager and they keep winning things. Or you know, look at Milan under the golden Berlusconi years, keep on changing. Or Real Madrid, etc.
Not sure the Milan comparison stand much attention, does it? Surely their golden years was very much under Capello and Sacchi.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's the impact of the January transfer window, really, isn't it, that you get?
Yeah. Bring them in now.
The transfer, the sackings that might have taken place in March, in the ye olde days, are now kind of compressed into November, December.
Well, you see, now I'm confused, because wasn't the point with West Brom that they don't need their manager to do the hirings and firings player-wise, because they're going to take care of that, and he just arranges the magnets on the board.
I mean, there are some anomalies, and we'll come on to Steve Clarke sacking, which seems a little cruel.
Right.
And perhaps does stand aside from some of the other ones.
Let's talk about it. I was tremendously shocked by it. You had a discussion going on the blogs. Well,
I think, you know, I think a lot of... You see, with every club...
Who won the discussion?
Well, I think the discussion...
There are never any winners in those discussions.
The discussion fell on the side of saying that he was unfairly sacked, but I think there's a significant percentage in every Premier League fans, amongst every Premier League fan group, that think that the manager should go because they're not doing well enough.
Mm.
And it's unrealistic expectations to a certain extent, but there's always stats to back it up. I mean, I think over the calendar year, West Brom have averaged less than a point a game, which is relegation form.
But they're West Brom.
They are West Brom, but, you know, when they do well, when they beat a Manchester United, then people say, oh, you've got this Berinho, you've got this Amalfitano, you've got great talents across the side, and now Sessegnon's playing well, etc.
Should have beaten Chelsea as well.
And that was the start of the bad run. So there's fine margins, but at the same time, you look at them on the when they're playing badly, and they look a very ordinary side.
Right. And who is it that they think is going to come in and suddenly make that collection of players do that much better?
Well, there's talk that Mike Phelan, who has never managed a club, could take over, or Michael Appleton, who has managed several clubs for a very short time, could come in, and they may well do a good job. They may well be good managers. I don't really know much. Well, I don't know much about Michael Appleton, and nobody knows how Mike Phelan would get on, but it doesn't really... I think I'd rather have Steve Clarke than either of them.
Hmm. Yeah.
West Brom supporting Palomine thinks it was a bad idea, but I had a Twitter chat with a couple of West Brom fans who thought it was absolutely right he should go because his results aren't good enough.
Do you know, there is the other thing of a similar occasion last year when there was a club that wasn't doing that well, but everyone thought, well, that's their dimension, etc., and it's a very unfair management decision. When they got rid of Nigel Adkins at Southampton and Pochettino came in, everyone went, well, actually, fair enough.
That's the other example that everybody uses. It's like, you know, why isn't Ralf Rangnick doing it, or some elite European coach.
He's director of football for Red Bull. Rafa Honigstein was revealing just when this question was raised yesterday.
Indeed, that's why I pulled the name out of the air, because I remembered it from your discussion.
Ah.
But, you know, there is now a vogue for, there must be a continental gem out there that nobody's heard of that we can get and suddenly start playing excellent football. But Southampton are doing slightly better than the rest, but they're still only like, you know, what is it, half a dozen points?
They're not doing so well at the moment. They haven't been doing...
They're 11 points from the bottom three. There's a comfortable margin. They're in the top half.
Yeah, but half a dozen points from the rest of that mob. Anyway, take that back. But he's the sort of exception that seems to be proving a rule for people. But everybody else who's changed the manager got relegated last year.
We'll see if West Brom have a plan, like Southampton clearly had a plan. And at the time that Adkins was sacked, I thought it was astonishingly harsh.
Crystal Palace didn't have a plan.
Didn't have a plan. I mean, they came eighth last year, West Brom. And... I mean, we just see time again that managers being punished for achieving success.
Yeah.
So like Ian Holloway at Crystal Palace, for example, they got promoted last year from the Championship when they had no right to expect that. And were out of their depth this season in the Premier League, and then it was hardly a surprise.
Palace have made a good, you know, I don't think they had a plan, but they've made good appointments. They got that guy from Cardiff and they put him in place, and then they put Pulis in. Now, Pulis is going to do you a particular type of job. He's going to make Palace a lot more difficult to beat. But then the question comes, well, once you're difficult to beat, then fans want you to play well and to score lots of goals, and that's not going to happen with Pulis. So if he keeps them up next season, there'll be different expectations.
Wow. Isn't that a metaphor for life? Anyway, now, Men of Fano says, Dutch pronunciation lesson for Jimbo, Muilensteen with a double E, is actually pronounced Muilensteen, as do not stay, do not tarry. Repeated vowel simply lengthens the vowel. The Dutch word telefoon with double U is actually pronounced like the English word telephone, and not like what I just said. So it's actually Mulen staying. And Kevin Strootman, as I would describe him, the great player at Roma, is not that at all. It's Kevin Strootman. So if the Roma player is transferred to Manchester United in the January window, we could be the first podcast to pronounce his name properly.
Mulen Stein sounds like he's from Salford anyway.
Mulen Stein. Yeah?
Yeah, doesn't he? You listen to him, he sounds like he's from the North.
Oh, I see. Sorry, I thought you meant the name. Yeah, right.
It sounds like a specific word for, like, say, if you spill some red wine on your sofa.
You've got a Mulen Stein. Mm. Interesting. How about their 4-1 defeat there in Liverpool against Everton?
Yeah, they gave it a go second half, didn't they?
Yeah. And Dempsey might be arriving, Barry. Is that correct, at Fulham?
It was mentioned in the papers today. Brian Ruiz could be off. Ooh. And I don't think anyone at Craven Cottage would be sorry to see him go by the sound of things. He's been awful this season. And he's wants to get... I mean, there's no question that he won't be selected for Costa Rica in the World Cup, but he is worried about the amount of minutes he's getting. So he could be off to Anderlecht, and Clint Dempsey could come in from Seattle Sounders.
Good knowledge.
That would be on one of these couple of months loan, New Year loans.
Yeah.
What you get from the USA.
Right.
Like Everton are looking at Landon Donovan as a replacement for Deulofeu.
Right. Well, that's a great shout, because Deulofeu, has there been any kind of more definitive word on how long he's likely to be out with that hamstring issue?
Well, he has a torn hamstring, and it could be months.
Really, could be months.
I think Martinez suggested he should think about returning for the final third of the season.
Really?
So a loan in from MLS would be just what the doctor ordered. Interesting, actually, just sorry, as an aside, talking about MLS, I saw a story in the Toronto Daily Star, I think it's called, newspaper, website, and they are saying that Jermaine Defoe to Toronto is a done deal.
Interesting, isn't it?
I like the sound of that.
You do?
Because if he goes to the MLS, that leaves a little slot that Gary Hooper might have a chance of filling in the World Cup squad.
Oh, right, okay. Interesting. Mm.
And also, I don't know much about currency, but they're saying that Defoe would be $10 million. I don't know, I presume that's Canadian dollars. And he would earn $150,000 a week, which would make him the highest paid player in MLS history.
All right. Well, I think that's probably enough of that. In a second or two, we'll have this. Hey, part three. And this just in from Neon, that Europa League draw in full. Not sure, this will be the last 68 or something like that, will it be?
It's a round of 32.
Round of 32. All right, then.
But we also know the round of 16 draw if they get through.
Oh, if they do get through. Oh, that'll just get confusing. Let's live in the now. Spurs have drawn one of the biggest names in European football, certainly based on letter count. It's Dnipropetrovsk. Right. Other ties to look out for. Swansea have got Napoli. Boy, that was some humdinger that was going on Sunday night down at San Paolo, April McInnes.
Yeah, I saw the last half an hour of the first half, so there were about three goals in that.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, some real great counter-attacking from Napoli.
Some terrific defending from both sides.
Well, yeah, that was abysmal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, just people just standing there and watching, and indeed backing away and saying, go on, pass through this corridor
it's
of uncertainty.
This seems to have just completely permeated City. Yeah, Zdenek Zeman, we were saying this last night, used to be pilloried and laughed at for this kind of managerial commitment to, naive managerial commitment to just trying to score goals. And now everybody seems to do it.
But it's not just Serie A, though, is it? I mean, you look at the big games in the Premier League this weekend, similar things.
Yeah. Well, Juventus. Now, Juve going out of the Champions League last week and very much one of the favourites now for this competition, especially since the final is going to be at their own stadium, the Juventus Arena. They've drawn Trabzonspor.
And I see they play Fiorentina in the next round.
Oh, if they get through. And Fiorentina have got Esbjerg?
Esbjerg?
Ex-Benedict.
No, sadly. Pilsen are taking on Shakhtar Donetsk. Maribor have got Sevilla. All sorts of excitement. Betis, who are, I think, bottom of the league right now, have got Rubin Kazan, and etc., etc. Ajax Salzburg. Yeah, that's all quite interesting. Do you know what? Before we go anywhere or close up shop today, there's a couple of other Champions League draws that we haven't mentioned yet. And they are, Barry.
Bayer Leverkusen take on Paris Saint-Germain.
Yes, indeed.
We talked about FC Schalke. Zenit St. Petersburg have got Borussia Dortmund.
All right, that's going to be interesting because Dortmund... It's all going very, very wrong all of a sudden for Jurgen Klopp, who was he had a Klopp strop in his press conference after their latest game, which featured a them coming from behind from 2-0 down, but they still only drew, so they're falling away. They're 12 points now behind Bayern, who are off in the World Clubs Cup.
He's the new Steve Clarke.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe he will be the new Steve Clarke. Who knows, eh?
Actually, I'm just thinking, because when you said talked about a strop, Klopp strop. Apropos going back to Sid, when you asked him had he anything, any other business, and he said no, he forgot to tell us that Mr. Sergio Ramos picked up his 18th yellow or red card over the weekend.
Was it his second red card in four games for Real as well?
I think that might not be too far away from the truth. All apparently, right. It was quite hard done by. It was two bookings, and one of them shouldn't have been a booking, but 18 red cards, and he's a young man. He's still like got 8 years in him, I'd say, or more. He could go and break all sorts of records.
Certainly could. Do you know what? It also occurs to me that when I was talking about the when we were talking about the Napoli Inter game, I don't know if we ever said what the score was. It was quite a big game, the battle for a top three spot.
And it was 4-2 to Napoli in the end.
4-2 to Napoli. Second week in a row we've had six goals in an Inter game, and they haven't won either of them. The previous week it was a 3-3 with Parma. So one or two problems there for Matt Saadi, who was facing his former club, just as Napoli manager Rafa Benitez was facing the club where he had an unhappy month or two a couple of years back.
What are the odds?
What are the odds indeed? And top of Serie A, Juve, 6 points clear, at least until Monday night, when Milan take on Roma. Do you know what? I think that's probably all we've got time for in this Football Weekly. You want to talk about the fifth place playoff in the World Clubs Cup, Simon. I can understand that. Maybe we can do that on Thursday, once it's happened.
Once it's happened, that'd be good. That'd be something to look forward to. Everyone likes a fifth-place playoff, I think.
Right. I'd say there's lots of excitement about it. You've got Marcello Lippi and his
that's right,
Wang
that's,
Zhu.
That's tomorrow night.
They take you on...
It's Lippi against Guardiola tomorrow night.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. That'd be big. Super. All right, well, that's it for now. Many thanks to guest producer Pete, Barry Glendinning, Paul McInnes and Simon Burton, and you, listener. Back on Thursday with a reaction to whatever it is that's going to happen between now and then. We'll see you then.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.